Tonight on the Daily Debrief.
It's basically pornography, Your Honor.
Attorneys for the owner of the New England Patriots fight to keep tapes of his alleged illegal sex acts private. Also, the city of Chicago sues actor Jesse Smollett, still claiming he lied about a racist attack. And a defendant takes the stand to explain why he stabbed and killed a college basketball player. Plus, a state expert comes under fire in the case of a man accused of killing his daughter. The nation's most fascinating cases are on the Daily Debrief. It's Friday, April 12th. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Debrief. Rachel Stockman is here. It's going to be a great discussion. Stacey Delicat, we have one jury still deliberating, so you never know what might happen. First, though, the news. A sex scandal involving an NFL team owner today resulted in his attorneys fighting to keep a key piece of evidence private. New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft did not appear in court, but his attorney showed up to attempt to keep surveillance video evidence in his prostitution case from becoming public. Both sides seem to admit that the surveillance videos in question show Kraft receiving a sex act from a spa worker on two separate occasions and paying with cash. Kraft is charged with soliciting another to commit prostitution and has pleaded not guilty. Kraft's attorneys argue that his right to privacy should take precedence over Florida's open record laws. They say Kraft will not receive a fair trial if the videos are made public. Attorneys representing various news organizations, but not the Law and Crime Network, say keeping the video private would violate the state's record laws and set a bad precedent for future cases. This broadcast has not sought the recordings.
If the affidavit says what happened, what is the interest the public has in seeing it? It's basically pornography, Your Honor. And I don't think that there's any particular interest that the state has or that the media has in publishing it. The actual acts have been described in an affidavit, allegedly described in an affidavit. We'll see if at trial it's different. But there's no need to actually see the video unless you have a prurient interest in seeing the video. The media is saying we need this video now. This is what we need because the Florida Sunshine Law is required. This video has existed for 3 months, and it's been known about for 2 months. Suddenly, it's absolutely vital. Why they can't wait for a couple more weeks to see what the court's decision is not explained. The irreparable harm that will happen to Mr. Kraft if that video is released prior to you even having an opportunity to decide whether or not it was constitutionally obtained by the police and by the state will be absolutely catastrophic. Whereas the public's interest in seeing this video is all about prurient interest.
And now to Iowa, where a man is accused of stabbing a college basketball player to death. Luke Van Hemmert is charged with second-degree murder in the 2018 killing of William Penn University basketball player Marquise Todd. Van Hemmert claims he stabbed in self-defense after a minor car accident outside the defendant's own home. The defendant testified today that he was hoping the situation would defuse itself or that his father would defuse it, but instead, he was attacked.
My dad got pretty close to the front door he got within the front door and the guy got probably within 3 feet of him. And at that time he put his hands up to get ready to fight him.
Okay. What did you do then?
At that point, I'm scared for my dad's life and mine, so I leave the side of the house.
Okay. Did Mr. Todd, this person that you later knew to be Mr. Todd, did he acknowledge that you were there, or was he just blindsided and did try to do something to him?
No, he seen me.
How do you know he saw you?
Because he turned his body and had his hands up still ready to fight me.
Okay. What happened then?
I tried tackling him, and that didn't work because he's a big guy, so he didn't move an inch when I tried tackling him.
Okay.
And then he kind of wraps his right arm around my waist or whatnot, whatever it was, and with his left hand, he starts punching me in the face and the side of the head.
Okay. Before you went to tackle him, did Mr. Todd swing at you or he was trying to hit you?
Yes, that's why I tackled him.
Okay. your dad described that earlier as you tried to go low on him. Is that what you, does that seem to be what you may have been talking about?
Correct.
And you went low because Mr. Todd's taking a swing at you?
Correct.
On cross-examination, the prosecutor asked the defendant to describe exactly how he stabbed the victim.
I want you to describe for me how you stabbed Mr. Todd when you say you were on the ground and he was on top.
I can't describe it. I was on the ground looking at the ground, so.
Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed.
Did you use your right hand to stab him?
Yes, sir.
Were you holding the knife with the blade this way, or were you holding the knife with the blade this way?
That way, sir.
This way?
Yes.
And what did you do? He's on top of you, you're facing the ground?
He's on top of me, I'm facing the ground, he's punching me in the face repeatedly. Mm-hmm. I'm scared for my life, so I do this.
You're doing this?
Yes.
All right. And he's supposedly hitting you, and you stab him through, all the way through his arm, all the way through his chest and into his heart.
I don't know, sir. I wasn't looking at him.
Also possible that he is following your father toward the door. You're over here, and you come at him with a knife and stab him in the shoulder and stab him in the heart and kill him with no warning. Right?
No, sir.
Well, your dad said the fight was over before it started. You heard him testify to that.
Yes.
Right. Didn't sound to me, did it to you, that you had time to get punched 6 or 7 times and wrestle around, throw on the ground, and reach into your pocket. Was it an open knife?
What do you mean, open
knife? Well, it wasn't a buck knife, right?
No, I had to open it, yes.
That's how the defendant says this all went down. Earlier today, the defendant's father said he had no clue what happened to that knife that they were just talking about.
Where did the knife go that killed Marquis Todd?
I have no idea.
You talked to your son the next day, apparently, correct?
Correct.
That's when you say you learned that he'd been the one that stabbed Mr. Todd. You didn't discuss what he used or where it was or
no.
What he'd done with it. Did Luke leave your presence a lot between the end of this call and when the police showed up?
No.
He was standing right there with you?
Yes.
Did you see him hand something to somebody else?
There's nobody else there but me and Eli.
Well, Mr. Baird had been there earlier. He
was gone as far as I knew.
Your wife was in the house. His girlfriend was in the house. Eli's blood is in the house.
Yep.
Anybody handle that knife? Somebody in the house that night?
No.
No, or you don't know?
I don't know.
One of the defendant's friends testified that the defendant, during a conversation with this friend, did not offer details about the stabbing. This exchange, though, between that friend and an attorney got a little testy.
You found out that somebody had been killed?
I had been all over Facebook and everything.
Okay, so the answer is yes?
Yes.
Did you find out that the person had died by being stabbed, or just know he died?
I just know he died.
All right. Did you ask the defendant what happened?
Yes.
What did he say?
He didn't give me a response.
When you talked to the police, you told him he just smiled at you and said you don't need to know.
He was on his phone looking at me when he had said that.
Wow.
He could
have
been
having a face-to-face conversation with him?
No, he was looking at his phone.
I see. So you're talking to him while he's doing what so many young people do, is look at their phone?
Yeah.
And so he smiled while he was telling you don't need to know.
Yeah, and from what I was assuming, he was on Facebook.
I don't want to know what you were assuming about what he was doing. I just want to know what you saw.
He was on Facebook.
All right. But he smiled and said, you don't need to know. That's what you told the police, right?
Like I said before, the words are misconstrued.
I don't want to know what you said before. I want you to answer my question. When you asked him what happened, his response was to be smiling at that time and saying, you don't need to know.
Yes.
Joining me tonight to discuss this case are Stacey Delacat and Rachel Stockman. Good evening to you ladies. Good to
Good
see
evening.
You here.
Hi.
So Stacey, let me ask you this one. I've got a credibility issue with a lot of the witnesses in this case. You've got the people in the car who claim that they were victimized by this defendant. You know, they were kind of wishy-washy with their stories. You've got this friend saying that the defendant himself was really wishy-washy about his story with me, and then the defendant's up on the stand telling this story about stabbing somebody in the heart, but he wasn't even looking at the guy.
Right. I mean, I have to say, despite that story sounding a little bit unbelievable, I actually found the defendant to be somewhat credible. I mean, you know, he is smaller than the victim. The victim is on top of him, and I find him credible in that perhaps he was fearful for his life, and, you know, as for how the injuries happen, I mean, yeah, that's a little bit confusing, but somehow they did. I mean, of all of the witnesses, I thought perhaps he was most credible.
You have basketball players here who are 6'8", 6'9". They're in that height range. I don't remember exactly how tall the defendant was, Rachel, but does it ultimately come down to a question of height?
Well, listen, the victim, alleged victim in this case, was 6'7". The defendant was, I believe, 5'7". So you do have a huge height difference. But does that necessarily mean that this is for sure a case of self-defense just because you have one guy that's bigger than the other? I don't know, because there's a lot of questions
right,
here.
Right.
The stories aren't clear.
Right. And I mean, the friends, right, the victim and the friends did allegedly go back to the scene. You know, it's like I always say, if anything ever happens in the car, some kind of road rage incident, just drive away and call the police because you never know what's going to happen. They, you know, the guy who was driving the car elected to bring his friends back and come back, you know, to the scene. Not that the defendant and his father and friends were innocent. You know, they threw a pipe at his car, but it was like these guys, these big basketball players come back for him. You could see how maybe he would be a little bit worse.
I mean, the whole thing's a complicated story. The jury's going to have a lot to wade through here. Rachel, interesting version of this defense as well, that the defendant is saying, well, I was in fear, but I was also afraid for my father, who's an older guy. Maybe these big basketball players could have hurt my father. Defense of another.
Well, yes, and that is an interesting point that he brought up. But ultimately, with so many of these details a little bit murky and some of the witnesses not being very credible, I think it's going to be a tough case to get a conviction on. I do.
All right, let's move back now to the case of a Florida man accused of killing his daughter by throwing her off of a bridge and into Tampa Bay. John Johnchuk is accused of murdering Phoebe Johnchuk. His defense is that he was legally insane and cannot be held criminally responsible. His civil attorney testified that at one point, he thought she was the creator. A doctor called by the state testified for 2 days this week that she thinks the defendant was making up symptoms of mental illness. Her testimony has been challenged by the defense because she claimed to have a board certification that the defense says she does not have. This witness wanted to testify that defendant John Johnchuk was a psychopath, but the judge would not allow her to say that. A defense witness tried to tear apart this state witness's credibility.
Bring John to his first evaluation with Dr. Lazaro?
I called for him and then brought him up there, yes.
Did you hear what Dr. Lazaro said prior to that evaluation?
Yes, I did.
What was it?
I heard her say that she didn't need to evaluate him to know he didn't have a mental illness.
And still ahead tonight here on the Daily Debrief, we'll talk about that civil case filed by the city of Chicago against actor Jesse Smollett. Plus, deliberations in the case of a babysitter accused of killing a child in her care. We head back inside the courtroom after this. The city of Chicago today followed through on its threat to sue actor Jesse Smollett to recover money authorities there say they wasted chasing Smollett's claim that he was attacked. But Smollett's attorneys say the city does not have constitutional ground to stand on. Less than 3 weeks after criminal prosecutors dropped disorderly conduct charges against Jussie Smollett, the city of Chicago is demanding that he pay more than $130,000. The city says that's the bill for 1,800 hours of overtime police spent on the case. In today's civil suit, the city says Smollett concocted a fake hate crime against himself, then deceived police and caused the city's money to be wasted investigating a hoax. Smollett has stood by his original story.
I would not be my mother's son if I was capable of one drop of what I've been accused of.
Smollett's attorneys did not respond to a law and crime request for comment, but in a letter announcing that Smollett would not pay the money, Smollett attorney Mark Garagos wrote that the city was unconstitutionally using a city ordinance against Smollett that was in the books primarily so the city could sue corporations for fraud. The Smollett saga has caused a major rift with District Attorney Kim Fox on one side and the city's mayor and police chief on the other.
This is a whitewash of justice.
Moving on now, a Florida prep school administrator is the latest person to face criminal charges in a nationwide college admission scandal involving several actresses. Mark Riddell is reportedly planning to plead guilty to charges of conspiracy to commit mail fraud, honest services mail fraud, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. Riddell is accused of secretly taking college entrance exams for students or replacing some of their answers with his own. He reportedly received $10,000 for every test he took. We are taking you back inside the California courtroom next week as a high-profile quadruple murder case begins to wrap up. Charles Merritt is accused of killing business partner Joseph McStay, wife Summer McStay, and the McStay's two young children. A biker found all four bodies in shallow graves in the Mojave Desert in 2013, 3 years after that family disappeared. Each family member was bludgeoned to death with a sledgehammer. Both sides are expected to rest next week with closing arguments to follow. Our live coverage of this complicated case resumes on Monday. Now to Ohio, where a jury has the case of a babysitter accused of killing a young girl in her care. Lindsay Parton is charged with involuntary manslaughter and three counts of endangering a child. Victim Hannah Weshey was just 3 years old when she died. Parton was babysitting the little girl when the little girl is said to have dumped ketchup in a toilet, which the prosecutor said was just typical child behavior. But the prosecutor says Parton lashed out, and the local sheriff says Parton admitted to hitting the child. The defendant herself took the stand in this case, and the jury is still deliberating. Lindsay Parton insisted she did not hurt Hannah and that she lied to investigators to protect other people, such as the child's father.
Cause harm to Hannah Weshey on March 8th?
I did not.
Did you cause harm to her on March 6th?
I did not.
Did you cause harm to her on March 7th?
I did not.
Why did you tell the police that you did?
Because I wanted to protect everybody.
And what do you mean by I wanted to protect everybody?
In the first interview, I felt like it was all about TJ. I mean, they even asked me if I was an abused wife, if he was abusing me. And I cared about Jason. I didn't want anybody to be in trouble.
On cross-examination, the defendant said she believed she could physically discipline that little girl, seemingly without consequences.
It's your testimony that on 3/9 of 2018, that you didn't know that admitting to shaking Hannah would get you in trouble.
No, I didn't think it would.
It's your testimony that on 3/9 of 2018, that you didn't know that shaking Hannah and that you didn't even know if she lost consciousness wouldn't get you in trouble.
No, I didn't think so.
You indicated that it was your belief you could physically discipline Hannah.
Yes.
Was it your belief, or did you think, Ms. Parton, that you could poke her chest?
I don't know if...
Ms. Parton, did you think that you could slap her across the face?
I have known other moms to do that.
That's not what I'm asking.
So I didn't think that it was an issue as a type of discipline?
That wasn't my question. My question was, it was your belief that you could physically discipline Hannah. Was it your belief that you could slap her across the face to discipline her?
Ask an answer.
There was an answer, Bill.
Thank you.
Yes.
Was it, did you think then Was it your belief that you could squeeze her middle?
Yes.
Was it your belief that you could hit her on the face with an open hand?
Yes.
And was it your belief that you could hit her on the chin with a closed fist?
Yes.
And it was it your belief that you could shake her?
Yes.
The defense says the state failed miserably to investigate the child's father, Jason Wesche, as a possible source of Hannah's injuries.
They want to say, we don't know what happened. Well, whose fault's that? Whose fault is that? Do you have 33,000 pages of Jason Wesche's phone? Why not? Because they didn't ask for it. Lindsay gave hers up by consent. And then they got a search warrant also, which they didn't need. But what did they never, ever ask for? Jason Wesche's phone. And why would you find that important? Because what he did, where he was, and who he was with, and that means Hannah was with, is absolutely, positively important to this case. The failure is in their hands. It is the state of Ohio's burden of proof to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Lindsay Parton did these things. We're talking about who, when, and those burdens lie squarely in the state of Ohio's hands, squarely. The defense has zero burden whatsoever. I could have sat in that seat, Mr. Pagan could have sat in his seat, and we could have asked not a single question. And I submit to you that if we had done that, you would still have all of the reasonable doubts that exist. All of them.
Our analysis continues now with Rachel Stockman and Stacey Delacat once again here. So look, this defendant's all over the place. She's up on the stand admitting that she's lying at various points, saying that she's doing it to protect somebody who now they're saying is the alternate suspect that the police should have really investigated. Stacey, how do you make heads or tails of this?
I mean, I just think it's hard to get past the testimony, the cross-examination, when she is saying, yeah, I think it's okay to hit the child with a closed fist. I think it's okay to slap the girl with an open hand. All of that said, though, I think the defense raises good points and pokes holes where I'm not sure that the jury will be able to convict without reasonable doubt.
You're nodding in agreement, Rachel.
Well, kind of, but I think that, again, when you hear that cross-examination, there's such a disconnect with this woman that she thinks it's okay to hit a child like this. She's lied. She's changed her stories that I think that the jurors may, I mean, listen, I'm kind of conflicted on this, but there definitely could be a situation
right, where
the jurors do convict her.
If she thinks it's okay to do that, who knows? She maybe thought it was okay to do worse.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the jury is probably having this discussion right now, but we have to wrap up. The jury's still deliberating. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll be back here on The Debrief Monday at 5 p.m. with our daily recap of trials. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you then. We'll be right back.